Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is the Dogs Program. The Australian Council for Defence of Government Schools are here every week at Saturday, 12 noon, without fail, to promote and to defend public education. Because our public schools are the best. They are, you're going to hear about a quite remarkable one today in our great state school. But there are other remarkable ones too, because it is in our public schools that everybody goes, including the so-called disadvantaged children. But our teachers don't, well, they're not interested in the word disadvantage. They believe that every child has possibilities. And if you go to the Age of this last Wednesday, you'll see where one of Melbourne's most, quote, disadvantaged schools has emerged as the top performer in this year's NAPLAN, because not only are the public schools got the best values because they believe every child matters, they also have some of the very best teachers who are really, really, really interested in their children. There's a very interesting article that Dale is going to give us from Trevor Coble from Save Our Schools. Let's get on with it, shall we? The case for full-service school models in Australia.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article from Save Our Schools Australia, the case for full-service school models in Australia. In their new report, the Mitchell Institute calls for full-service school models as a purpose-built solution to Australia's growing educational inequality. Despite decades of reform and record investment, inequality in Australian schools persists and continues to grow. Students in high needs communities can face multiple compounding barriers to learning, poorer health, food insecurity, unstable housing, and limited access to early and ongoing supports. This can contribute to rising absenteeism, disengagement, and widening achievement gaps. The Mitchell Institute's new report, Achieving Better and Fairer Schools, the Case for Full-Service School Models in Australia, argues that traditional schools are not designed to respond to these complex needs. A different approach is needed to address the growing inequities in student engagement, well-being, and achievement. Our report calls for full-service school models as a purpose-built solution designed to integrate education, health, and social supports so that all children have the opportunity to thrive. What are full-service schools? Full-service schools integrate education, health, and social supports within the school environment to address barriers to learning. They are tailored to local needs and strengths and developed in collaboration with families and community partners to ensure support reaches students where it matters most. Every partnership and service is designed to strengthen students' engagement and connection to learning. Some services target student learning, mentoring, tutoring, extended academic activities, specialist clubs. Others target engagement and well-being, parenting support and family learning, meal programs, mental health and well-being services. The aim is not to take the focus from teaching and learning, but to create the conditions in which teaching and learning can flourish. Why full-service schools are needed now? Our analysis of student engagement and learning outcomes reveals that the gap between advantaged and disadvantaged students is worsening, with evidence showing that the greatest challenges are found in schools serving communities experiencing concentrated poverty and higher levels of need. The learning gap between advantaged and disadvantaged students equates to more than 5 years of schooling by year nine. In 2024, the average attendance rate of students in Australia's most disadvantaged schools was 9.9 percentage points lower than for students in the most advantaged schools. Socially disadvantaged students are almost three times more likely than their advantaged peers to miss school for long periods. Around one in three students from low SES backgrounds skip breakfast before school, compared to one in six from high SES families. Traditional school models alone cannot overcome these challenges. The Better and Fairer Schools Agreement 2025 to 2034 explicitly recognises the need for stronger connections between schools and the services that support students' learning and well-being. Full-service schools offer a clear, evidence-based way to deliver on that ambition. Who benefits? Full-service schools not only benefit students, they also strengthen the ecosystem around children and young people, contributing to healthier and more resilient communities. Students benefit academically and emotionally because barriers to learning, such as hunger, trauma, or untreated health issues, are reduced through health and well-being supports, so they can attend school more regularly and engage and focus more wholly on learning. Families receive easier access to vital community services, leading to improved engagement in their children's education. Schools and teachers are supported to focus on education rather than crisis management. Disadvantaged communities benefit from schools that act as trusted spaces for support, connection, and collaboration. From evidence to action, a framework for delivery. Our report identifies five key features that underpin successful models. 1. Dedicated coordination to support the work of teachers. 2. Sustainable funding for long-term planning and growth. 3. Broad impact assessment beyond academic results. 4. Co-design with students, families, and communities. 5. Alignment across government agencies. Making it happen nationally and locally. Australian schools already offer a range of learning, engagement and well-being supports to students and families, some through partnerships with community organisations. Building on this foundation, our analysis has identified the three system-level conditions required to implement and sustain full-service school models effectively across school systems. Dedicated coordination. A full-time coordinator or small team links education with health, well-being, and community services. They manage needs assessments, referral pathways, and data-informed supports to ensure timely, culturally responsive interventions. System-level support. State and territory departments must provide central guidance, infrastructure and partnership support. Department teams help with needs assessments, streamlined engagement, and formalised cross-sector partnerships. Extra central support is crucial where local service capacity is limited. Locally tailored services. Full-service schools must reflect local needs and existing strengths. Flexible, community-informed service mixes ensure the model works across diverse contexts, metropolitan, regional, and remote, rather than imposing a one-size-fits-all approach. A timely opportunity for reform. Full-service schools offer a practical way to translate national reform priorities into practice. The timing could not be better. The Better and Fairer Schools Agreement provides a platform for a shift towards integrated, place-based reforms that recognise that health, engagement and well-being supports are essential to improving conditions for learning. Addressing educational inequality means moving reform beyond the classroom, acknowledging that broader social and health factors shape students' capacity to learn. Embedding much-needed supports within schools offers a promising way for governments to realise the goals of the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement, ensuring that national aspirations translate into tangible outcomes for children and young Australians. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dale. Of course, our teachers need all of the support that they can get, and so do our social workers and our health workers. And if they support each other, then our children are the beneficiaries. But let's have a bit of a break, shall we?
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Well, Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs Program. As I said before, and we say many times, the public school teachers are the best. They're prepared to put the extra mileage in for the children who have problems. But the OECD survey is showing that Australian teachers have a very, very heavy workload. This is because, of course, they have romanced about decentralising our bureaucracies and they don't have the support mechanisms from the centre that they should have.
Thanks, Jean. This article was written by Trevor Kobold and is entitled OECD Survey Shows Australian Teachers Have a Very Heavy Workload. New figures released by the OECD show that Australian teachers have one of the heaviest workloads in the OECD. Their working week is one of the longest in the OECD because of the large non-teaching workload. The heavy workload is a key factor in teacher stress, well-being, and resignations. Governments have failed to reduce the workloads, thereby exacerbating the ongoing shortage of teachers. More comprehensive policy initiatives and programs are needed to reconfigure the work of schools to reduce teachers' workload and better support student learning and well-being. The OECD Teaching and Learning International Survey, TALIS 2024, shows that lower secondary teachers in Australia have the third longest working week in the OECD. They work 46.4 hours a week, behind only Japan, 55 hours, and New Zealand, 47.5 hours. The working week for Australian teachers is much longer than the OECD average of 41 hours. By contrast, lower secondary teachers in Finland work 36 hours a week, whilst Turkey has the shortest working week at 31 hours. The long working week in Australia is due to long hours of non-teaching duties. Australian lower secondary teachers spend fewer hours teaching than the average for the OECD, but have the second largest non-teaching burden. The survey shows that Australian lower secondary teachers teach an average of 20 hours a week, compared to the OECD average of 22.7 hours. Teachers in Costa Rica teach 32 hours a week, and those in Chile 30 hours, while teachers in Norway teach 16.6 hours a week, and those in Japan teach 17.8 hours. Australian lower secondary teachers spend 26.4 hours a week on non-teaching tasks. This is the second longest in the OECD, behind Japan with 37 hours a week. This is much longer than the average for the OECD of 18 hours a week. Teachers in Turkey spend 9 hours a week on non-teaching tasks. The main factor contributing to the non-teaching load is planning, marking, and collaboration with colleagues. Australian lower secondary teachers spend 18.1 hours a week on these tasks. This is the fourth highest in the OECD, only marginally behind teachers in Costa Rica, Colombia, and Slovakia. The average for the OECD is 15 hours. While teachers in Finland and Turkey spend 10 hours a week on these tasks. 50% of Australian teachers consider excessive marking of students' work a source of stress. This is amongst the highest in the OECD, behind only Portugal, which is 77%, Norway, 52%, the Netherlands, 52%, and Sweden, 51%. One cause of the excessive hours on marking student work is likely to be preparation of students to take NAPLAN tests. TALIS 2024 was conducted in two phases, Term 1, 2023, and Term 3, 2024, and the teacher questionnaire asks how many hours teachers spent on tasks in the last complete week of teaching. A feature of Term 1 in Australian schools is a frenzy of practicing for NAPLAN, and it is likely what teachers see as excessive hours on marking student work as related to NAPLAN. Moreover, NAPLAN applies to two of the lower secondary years, Year 7 and Year 9. Research on classroom time spent practicing for NAPLAN is limited and dated. However, a recent study noted that schools do practice tests for many weeks prior to the tests. A State of Our Schools survey conducted by the Australian Education Union in 2020 found that 66% of teachers consider that NAPLAN increases their workload. A survey conducted by the Independent Education Union in 2019 found that schools are spending a ludicrous amount of time preparing for tests. However, it is to be noted that other OECD countries also conduct standardized testing during secondary school, but it is not clear whether they involve a similar intensity of classroom practice as in Australia. Another significant aspect of the long non-teaching hours is the time spent on administrative tasks. Teacher surveys show this is a major source of discontent among Australian teachers and a factor contributing to teacher attrition. TALIS 2024 shows that lower secondary teachers in Australia spend an average of 4.7 hours a week on administrative tasks. This is the fourth highest in the OECD behind Korea, Japan, and Chile. The average for the OECD is 3 hours. Teachers in Finland and France spend only 1.5 hours a week on administration. Administration and compliance work is a major source of stress for Australian teachers. TALIS 2024 found that 69% of lower secondary teachers considered that administrative work is a source of stress. This is the third highest in the OECD, behind teachers in Portugal, 79%, and Belgium, 70%. It should be noted that TALIS is about lower secondary teachers and does not include information about other teachers. Some of the figures may look different if there was separate data about primary school teachers or those teaching in senior high schools. Moreover, interpretation as to what constitutes workload may vary between countries. Consequently, these findings may not provide a complete picture of the state of teacher workload. Reducing teacher workload is part of the priority given to retaining teachers in the National Teacher Workforce Action Plan, announced in 2022. It provides funding for a workload reduction fund to pilot initiatives to examine ways of reducing teacher workload. A Productivity Commission report found that teacher workload is the main factor behind teachers' intention to leave the profession. It criticised the National Teacher Workforce Action Plan because it does not provide a systemic way to identify and reduce burdens on teacher workload across all jurisdictions and sectors. It called on governments to make more consistent and concerted efforts to reduce the workload. Reducing teacher workload was recommended by the report by the Expert Panel on a Better and Fairer Education System. It said, "Reducing the additional burdens on teachers is essential to attracting more suitable people to the profession and retaining the skilled and passionate teachers we have." A profound insight into the workload of teachers is provided by an audit of the administrative tasks for teachers conducted by the New South Wales Department of Education in 2024. The audit identified the range and complexity of what teachers actually do in schools. It found that policy is the main driver of operational tasks in schools and identified 201 policies which are difficult for schools to access, use, and implement. The audit also identified 105 tasks with processes considered frustrating, painful, cumbersome, or overly complex, and causing a high or very high workload. Some 30 or so tasks with a very high workload involving teachers included complex and manual paperwork, increased curriculum differentiation, and resource creation, greater administration required for student well-being. A review of administrative and compliance activities in Victorian public schools in 2024 found that teachers are spending an average of 8 hours a week on administrative and compliance work, which is diverting teachers from their core tasks of teaching and supporting students. Some 77% of teachers surveyed said that the administrative and compliance workload has been getting worse for some time. The report found that growth of departmental programs and policies has contributed to increased administrative and compliance workload. There is also evidence for a sustained increase in administrative and compliance workload in department policies and programs, which have grown over time, often in response to external regulatory or accountability requirements. New requirements compound over time to create a large workload, and it is rare to remove older requirements as new ones come into effect. Many other studies show that workload and its associated stress are a major factor in teachers leaving the profession. For example, a recent paper identified several key elements in teachers' working conditions, experiences at work, and health and well-being that impact on decisions to leave the profession. The first in a series of papers by academics at Monash University on the future needs of the teaching profession found that administration and compliance activities and meetings take disproportionate teacher time and are often not seen as valuable for teaching, learning, and well-being. Another recent paper on teacher workload found that administrative duties, compliance requirements, and excessive data collection are taking time away from lesson planning and student engagement. This is leading to burnout and a sense of professional disillusionment. The growth in reporting and compliance requirements for school principals and teachers is reflected in the huge growth in central office executive and administration staff that far outstrips the growth in students and teacher numbers. Governments have increasingly recognised that teacher workload is a major policy issue that restricts teacher supply and the learning of students. However, little progress has been made in reducing workload. Total working hours and non-teaching hours in TALIS 2024 are unchanged from TALIS 2018. Time spent on administration was virtually the same as in TALIS 2018, 4.7 hours compared to 4.4 hours, an increase of 18 minutes per week. Governments have introduced a variety of measures to reduce teacher workload. For example, the New South Wales School Admin Reduction Program aims to employ more administrative staff in schools and to improve the operational efficiency of schools by improving the management of school systems and processes. There is no mention of reducing the range of policies and procedures identified by the audit report. The Victorian government has a program to reduce face-to-face teaching time in 2023 and 2024 to allow more time for planning and collaboration. It also introduced a program to save teachers time writing occupational health and safety reports. It recently announced an operational teaching assistant trial to help with administration tasks in schools, such as collecting payments and entering data. It also announced that it will track the administration and compliance workload and set improvement targets. Once again, there is no mention of reducing the range of policies and procedures imposed on schools by central office. At the end of October, the Queensland government announced a red tape reduction program for schools. It includes simplifying processes for reporting behaviour and health and safety incidents in schools. It also aims to streamline and automate administrative processes in schools and simplify and rationalise policies, procedures and initiatives impacting schools. It is doubtful whether these policies and actions are sufficient to resolve the workload issue because they fail to consider several matters. One, teachers' workload is not just a time issue, but also involves the intensity of the work. Two, reducing teacher workload is a funding issue. Three, reducing central office demands on teachers is critical. And four, pilot projects can be a way of delaying effective reduction of workload. The growing complexity and intensity of teachers' works in schools is not fully addressed by current policy responses. Researchers have found that concentrating on reducing workload by 1 or 2 hours is not sufficient because it does not address the complexity and intensity of teacher work and the burnout it leads to. As an article in the Queensland Teachers Journal states, too often, proposals to solve the problem of teacher workload fail to consider the complex cognitive, emotional, or psychosocial labour required to perform tasks. Time poverty is the relationship between the amount of work a teacher or school leader does and the intensity or complexity of that work. Addressing time poverty must be a focus of governments and school systems to make teaching more attractive and sustainable. Reorganizing the work in schools is critical to resolving workload issues. Professors Pasi Salberg and Sharon Goldfeld have proposed that schools be reconfigured to focus as much on the well-being and health of students as their academic learning. The proposal advocated for schools to function as multi-opportunity communities or community hubs designed to optimize whole child development that set students up for lifelong success. A series of reports by the Monash University Faculty of Education recommend that schools need more teachers and allied professionals to support the learning of students. Public schools are vastly underfunded and will remain so for at least another 10 years. Full service or community schools are designed to provide integrated educational, health and social supports, and there is strong evidence of their success in all-round development of children. This highlights the importance of funding in resolving workload and work intensity issues. The massive underfunding of public schools restricts the learning, health, and well-being of students. Full funding would enable implementation of full-service schools. It is a funding priority. Another problem with current approaches to reducing teacher workload is that they largely ignore a key source of workload, namely central and regional office reporting and compliance requirements. Little is being done to reduce this. As noted above, the workload programs of the New South Wales and Victorian governments appear to have ignored the findings of their respective reviews of teacher workload. Cutting back bureaucracy in central office and schools frees up funding for more teachers and other professionals to directly support the learning and well-being of students. Simply employing more administrative staff in schools to cope with the demands of central and regional offices diverts more funding away from directly supporting students. Employing more allied professionals to support student well-being would contribute to reducing time spent on reporting and compliance, as would streamlined central and regional office demands on teachers. Reducing teacher workload is largely hived off to pilot projects. Several governments have announced pilot projects to reduce the administrative workload of principals and teachers, as a recent academic paper noted. Policy actions remain in the pilot phase under development or only loosely tied to teacher retention. Pilot projects are not needed to reduce teacher workload. The New South Wales Audit Report and the Victorian Independent Review called for education departments to reduce the reporting and accountability demands on teachers. In the context of all the research now available on teacher workload in Australia, pilot projects to reduce workload appear to be a way to delay real action. TALIS 2024 adds to the mountain of evidence on the heavy workload and associated stress endured by Australian teachers. Much more than the existing programs is needed by governments to reduce the workload. The heavy workload is a major factor in attrition from the profession and the difficulty in attracting new entrants. The learning and well-being of students is at stake. Fully funding public schools to employ more teachers and allied professionals is fundamental to reducing the workload. Back over to you, Jean.
Thank you so much, Sorrel. We really do appreciate your help every week. But now we're going to go all around the world, not just to America or the UK. Jeff has really been busy this week. So let's get our running shoes on, shall we?
Good afternoon, listeners. We're going to stay away from the USA this week. I think we've had enough of it for a while. We're going to start this week in the UK. This is an article by Jessica Murray, who's a social affairs correspondent. And the article's called Schools Urged to Trial 4-Day Week to Ease Pressure on Teachers in England and Wales. Advocacy group tells Education Secretary Working Smarter can protect staff well-being and help students. The article goes, campaigners have urged the government to pilot 4-day working weeks in schools in England and Wales, saying it would boost teacher well-being, retention and recruitment rates. The 4-Day Week Foundation has written to the Education Secretary calling for greater autonomy for schools to pilot shorter working weeks, saying the government will not be able to meet its manifesto pledge of recruiting 6,500 new teachers without change. It comes after the Scottish Government announced new proposals last week for teachers to be able to work a flexible 4-day teaching week, which would see them given 1 day a week to focus on work as such as preparation and marking. Recently published government guidance for England states that all state-funded schools should be open and educating pupils 5 days a week, morning and afternoon. And although the government has supported more flexible working, it has resisted calls to formally implement a 4-day week for teachers. James Reeves, the 4-Day Week Foundation's campaign manager, said, "Teachers are burning out at unprecedented rates. A 4-day week isn't about doing less. It's about working smarter, protecting staff well-being, and ultimately improving outcomes for students. It's time for bold leadership and evidence-driven 4-day school week trials to show what a modern, sustainable education system can look like." In the Foundation's letter to Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, it said there was a growing body of research showing that shorter working weeks can reduce burnout, improve productivity and support better working-life balance, which would particularly benefit a sector grappling with unprecedented pressure on staff. Earlier this year, teacher vacancies hit a record high in England, with the National Foundation for Education Research saying pupil behaviour was one of the fastest-growing contributors to teacher workload since the pandemic, and that class sizes were getting larger owing to staff shortages. According to the Department of Education, nearly as many teachers left the profession in England as entered it last year. The campaign group said schools should be empowered to trial different timetables, including controlled 4-day school week trials, to provide relief for teachers and support staff, and generate data on how it may improve teaching quality and school performance. "Head teachers don't need government permission to explore new working arrangements," said Reeves. "Legally, they have the flexibility to proceed. We must find solutions to the recruitment and retention crisis so young people can have some stability in their schools." A number of schools in the UK have already begun experimenting with shorter school weeks, including 4-day weeks, 4.5-day weeks and 9-day fortnight. In September, the General Secretary of the National Education Union, Daniel Cabide, called for full-time ed teachers to be permitted to work 1 day a week from home and for more flexibility. The Education Secretary has also previously said she believes state school teachers in England should be given the right to work away from the classroom on lesson preparation, marking and pupil assessment. The issue of contact hours has become a major issue in Scotland, where teachers have been balloted for strike action over what union leaders described as a crippling workload. The Scottish National Party pledged in 2021 to cut the maximum weekly class contact time for teachers from 22.5 hours to 21 hours. The Department of Education spokesperson said, "Last year saw one of the lowest rates of teachers leaving the profession since 2010, and we remain committed to tackling recruitment and retainment challenges. We support schools in offering their staff flexible working while ensuring every child receives brilliant teaching for the full school week. That's why we are funding a program to embed flexible working within schools and expand these opportunities." Well, that's the end of the article, but I think that sounds like a splendid idea. I think our teachers are far overworked. They're doing so much administration these days, and I think it's an excellent idea. Perhaps we should look at that here in Australia. And now we're going to go to a story. It's actually it's from Thailand, from the Bangkok Post, from Chulalongkorn University and the Embassy of Finland, which recently hosted a forum to discuss ways to address current challenges faced by the kingdom's education system and to find ways to advance Thailand's education sector. The title is "The Forum Explores Lessons from Finland's Teaching Reforms." So Chulalongkorn University, University of Finland and the Embassy of Finland recently hosted a forum to discuss ways to address current challenges faced by the kingdom's education system and to find ways to advance Thailand's education sector. The forum, dubbed "The School of the Future and Its Success Factors," was organised after the Ministry of Education signed a Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU, with its Finnish counterparts on expanding collaboration within the education sector. The Memorandum of Understanding established a framework for cooperation in several areas, including early childhood education, vocational training, teacher development, and the integration of AI and digital skills. Professor Dr. Willett Pirawat, President of Chulalongkorn University, said educators and policymakers in Thailand are still grappling with rapid technological changes, which Finland is tackling through innovation and educational reform. He said the Finnish education system places an emphasis on equity, student well-being, teacher professionalism and autonomy, media literacy and digital classroom tools that foster critical thinking. Reflecting on Finland's experience at the forum, the country's Minister of Education, Anders Altakruz, said high-quality education underpins both economic resilience and social cohesion. As such, he said, Finland strives to ensure that all students, regardless of background, have access to the best educational opportunities. Finland boasts some of the world's highest levels of social mobility. The country offers a diverse range of learning pathways, allowing students to grow according to their interests and lifestyles, reflecting the belief that life is not a single route, but a network of possibilities. Mr. Altakruz said arts and crafts education remains central to cultivating compassion, self-reflection and deeper understanding. Schools, he added, should be viewed as communities where well-being grows through social interaction, supported by safety, friendship and physical activity. He added that many countries draw inspiration from Finland's educational reforms, which began in the 1970s, noting administrative burdens such as excessive paperwork were reduced so teachers can focus on helping students. Most teachers now hold a master's degree, supported by university programs that provide robust training for future educators. We know that our teachers are good, he said. And that's the end of the article. And that's another fine example, I think, to look at. Finland has had such a successful system that the world should be looking at all the aspects of its integration. There's no private schools in Finland. They're not allowed. Everybody should have a good public school, and that's what the dogs believe too. Now, we're going to an interesting article to finish up. This is about education, but it's actually from the New Ways Ministry in Germany, and it's actually a report about bishops' conference that went on there. Now, bishops shouldn't really have anything to say about education as far as the dogs are concerned, but it's an interesting article because it expresses a subtle change in the Catholic Church doctrine in Germany. Now, only about 7% of students in Germany overall go to private schools or often religious schools, but majority, 93% of German students go to public schools. This article is directed at public schools primarily, but it is encouraging them to be more tolerant of all different types of views. So the article is by Lindsay Dick. German bishops release education guidelines that affirm diverse sexualities. It begins, school must be a place where children and young people find protection from discrimination and personal denigration. A place where they experience acceptance in their individual development and at the same time learn to accept others. This is the opinion of a chairman of the School Commission of the German Bishops Conference. It is also the foundation of a recent document issued by the Bishops Conference, which calls for the recognition of the diversity of sexual orientations in schools. The document provides educational and pastoral guidelines for a sensitive approach to sexual diversity, which emphasise holistic personality development and respect for the dignity of every person, reported the Katholische Deutschland. Entitled Created, Redeemed and Loved, this new set of guidelines points out a variety of ways students, parents and teachers can safeguard diversity in schools. They emphasise, firstly, that everyone at a school bears responsibility for fostering a positive school climate and respectful treatment of queer youth. Students, for instance, should stand up against discrimination and be sensitive to hurtful, exclusionary insults directed at others. The bishops also highlight the monumental role of teachers in this undertaking, stating, "Teachers should pay attention to the gender and role models, as well as homophobic stereotypes conveyed in learning materials. They should foster a classroom climate in which children and young people feel seen and taken seriously as they explore their sexual orientation and gender identity. The document also calls on teachers to present Catholic doctrine about queer people in a nuanced way to allow students to form their own reasoned opinions. In an interview with Catholic publication Die Tagespost, Bishop Thomas Maria Rentz had many positive things to say about created, redeemed and loved. Rentz pointed out that there has been an increase in hostility towards queer young people in his own diocese, acknowledged by the Catholic Free School of the Diocese Rothenburg and Stuttgart, which comprises approximately 90 schools. This trend of growing hostility made a statement from the bishops necessary and desirable. Rentz also points out the limitations of the document, saying that because it's not the church's task to make scientific determinations on sexual identity, any attempt to use the document to do so will fail. The church cannot commit itself to a position when the topic is still so heatedly debated in circles of experts, he added. Rather than making sweeping generalizations, Rentz believes that the church must discern between accepting those who feel differently and naively blessing everything that young people may feel during adolescence. What the church should work towards, according to Rentz, is becoming a safe space of goodwill and providing freedom from fear, trust and impatience. Freedom from fear, trust and patience, in which young people have the time to find, accept and stabilise their sexual identity. So that's the end of the article. But I just thought it was an interesting one because it showed that maybe because of changes at the top, the Catholic Church is softening its views, at least in Germany, towards a variation in sexual identity, which all kids of the world are having a bit of a revolution about, and more power to them all to do so. And with that bit of news from Germany, from Thailand, from Finland, and from the UK, most of those articles are positive. And I just thought we needed a week away from the US because that way lies madness. And I'll pass you back to the headquarters of the Dogs, and I hope you have a lovely weekend. Cheerio.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jeff. Isn't it nice to have a bit of a holiday from thinking about America? Now we've got our really good news story, but let's have a break first.
Looking for an easy way to keep up with your annual 3CR subscription? You can now set up an annual debit from your bank account or credit card, and once a year your payment will be automatically deducted. You can cancel at any time and you'll get a reminder each year before payment. Be a constant supporter of Melbourne's precious independent community radio station and set up a recurring payment today. Just go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Well, we hope you're still with us at the Dogs Program because this is the best part of the program. As we've said earlier, our teachers in public schools are special because they know how to deal with the children who are in trouble in the rest of the society. And we're going to hear about a girl, her name is Brittany, who was in great danger, but now has got a future, a real future, because of our public system and because of the teachers. So let's hear about Brittany and her school, shall we?
Thanks, Jean. This is an article from The Guardian by Adeshola Orr, titled, After 50 Suspensions, Brittany ended up at a school of last resorts. Experts say her success should be the norm. An alternative state school in Melbourne's north that caters to at-risk students is turning lives around and providing a model for early intervention outside the youth justice system. By year 8 of high school, Brittany Magnani had racked up more than 50 suspensions. The emotions from her turbulent home life would sometimes spill out at school, and she would verbally lash out. At other times, she said she was suspended after hanging around with the wrong crowd. There were also times when it was just a cry for help, and it just led to suspension, she says. She was later permitted to attend her public school for only 3 hours a day. As a last resort, she was referred to an alternative state school in Melbourne's north, the Pavilion School, that caters for students disengaged or excluded from mainstream education. Its cohort includes students who have contact with the youth justice system and children in out-of-home care. Under Pavilion's flexible learning model, students are offered face-to-face contact hours ranging from 2.5 to 5 hours, depending on the student's needs. There are vocational pathways, individualised learning options, and a Koori program for First Nations students. Each class is made up of students of different ages and abilities and is allocated 3 staff, a teacher, a teaching assistant, and a wellbeing worker. As the Victorian government talks tough about youth crime, human rights and legal experts are reiterating calls for investment in early intervention outside the justice system. The government may have taken heed, at least partly. Recently, amid talk of increased sentences for youth offenders, it announced a plan to employ social workers at 20 public schools in a bid to prevent at-risk students from dropping out. The government said its plan, which the teachers' union said was paying lip service to a larger issue, was designed to address the link between chronic absence from school and violent youth offending. It pointed to data from Victoria's Council on Bail, Rehabilitation and Accountability that suggested 70% of the state's worst youth offenders were chronically absent from school before they began offending. Magnani says she began to consistently attend school after enrolling at Pavilion's Epping campus. She graduated last year and is now studying a diploma in community services. It was the caring nature, them understanding you and not just seeing you as a kid, she says, of the school. They see you as a person and as an equal. The care they show you means there's vulnerability you're allowed to have. Along with the school's individualised learning approach, Magnani also credits one of its wellbeing workers with helping her turn her life around. I could explore my feelings and I found what I wanted to do. I found the person I'm going to be, she says. When she struggled to access meals at her foster care placement during her years at Pavilion, Magnani says she could confide in the school's wellbeing worker. They'd be the voice that I needed, she said. In her final years at Pavilion, the wellbeing worker recognised Magnani's passion for a positive experience she had with a child protection worker and suggested she commence a vocational certificate in community services. She hopes to work in a frontline role with children in the out-of-home care system. I just want to be someone who can help, she says. If you're just a good person, you can help someone's life a lot better, so I wanted to do that. One of Magnani's former classmates, 19-year-old Taya Carroll, enrolled at Pavilion 4 years ago when she was battling alcohol addiction and attempting to wean off prescription pills. There were frequent run-ins with police, her attendance at her previous school was sparse, about once a week, and she would often turn up drunk. I felt like I was so far behind that I was just never going to catch up, so there was no point, she says. For Carol, the support at Pavilion extended beyond the classroom. When struggling with withdrawal symptoms, the wellbeing worker would accompany her on excursions to help distract her. It really changed my mindset that people were out there to help me and not to get me. It just made me feel very important, she said. Thinking and learning differently. Victoria's outgoing Children's Commissioner, Meena Singh, says there should be more flexible learning options. Especially since COVID, we're seeing that there's lots of children and young people who are not getting their educational needs and their health and wellbeing needs met through mainstream education services, she said. We need to think differently about how children and young people learn and the impact of trauma on their learning. Singh says trauma-informed education needs to be at the centre of all schools, but many are using suspensions and exclusions to deal with behaviours rather than trying to understand where the behaviours are coming from. We often look for the shiny fix when it comes to issues like youth justice, she said, but it is absolutely the basics that have to be put into every single child's life in order for them to thrive. A safe, stable home, access to health and wellbeing services when they are needed, and being able to engage in school. Hearing the stories of children and young people who have become engaged in the legal system, we know that disengagement from education has featured in their backgrounds. Despite the effect Pavilion has had on students like McNani, there are concerns about how it can maintain staffing levels. Funding for Charles La Trobe College, which runs Pavilion's two campuses in Melbourne's north, is based on total enrolment numbers. Paul Bridgeford is the chair of charity Link Centre Foundation, who also sits on Pavilion's subcommittee. He says four staff positions at the school are set to be lost from next year. He is campaigning alongside a group of parents for Pavilion to become a standalone school. Victoria's Education Department did not respond to a question about the reduced staff positions, but a spokesperson said flexible learning options play an important role in our system in serving the needs of students who require flexibility in their education. The Pavilion School plays an effective role in supporting more than 200 students who need additional support to re-engage in full-time schooling, the spokesperson said in a statement. McNani agrees, thinking back to her earlier schooling and the series of suspensions she underwent, McNani pauses as she considers how she envisioned her future would play out. I didn't really have a future for myself because my mental health was so horrible back then, she says. I didn't care what the future looked like. As she prepares to become a community service worker in the coming years, she is certain Pavilion helped change her life. It put me in a path where I realize I'm more than I thought I could be, and I can help people, and I can be great, she says. It's everything I could have wished for. Back to you, Jean.
Well, wasn't it a great story? And here is our Great State School.
This week's Great State School of the Week is the Pavilion School. Now, here's a little bit from their website. The Pavilion School aims to re-engage students into school, develop their love of learning, and grow their academic, social, and emotional skills. What is the Pavilion School? The Pavilion School is a state secondary school based in Preston and Epping. We are a flexible learning school offering flexible timetables, additional support staff in classes, and a relational approach that focuses on inclusive practices and adjusting school requirements to meet the needs of the students. We deliver the VCE, Vocational Major, and Victorian Pathways Certificate, VET, Art and Sport electives, Query programs, cultural support, food tech, and health and wellbeing programs. The Pathways program offers students a tailored transition into further education and employment. Our school does not request any payments or contributions, and all services are provided at no cost to parents and carers. At the Pavilion School, we understand that learning takes place in the context of strong, secure relationships and when students feel connected, supported, seen, and heard. The Pavilion School is a proud Victorian government school that seeks to provide the highest standard of public education for young people aged 14 to 18 who've been disengaged or excluded from mainstream education. The Pavilion School offers the Victorian Pathways Certificate, VPC, and VCE, Vocational Major, Youth Work Support, Electives and Extension Activities. So support from the wellbeing team includes counselling, mediation, restorative practices, and health and wellbeing curriculum. The Pathways program offers students a tailored transition into employment and further education. What's the aim of the Pavilion School? The Pavilion School aims to re-engage young people who are currently disengaged from school by providing students with an engaging and fun education that's matched to student needs and interests. The Pavilion School provides students with a supportive learning environment and seeks to develop literate, numerate, curious, and compassionate learners. The Pavilion School team achieves this by being culturally safe and inclusive, developing trusting relationships, building on the strengths and skills of students, and connecting with families and community. Why was it established? The Pavilion School was developed by the Department of Education for more educational options for young people who had disengaged from mainstream education. The Department of Education, along with a group of dedicated partners, worked alongside the founders to establish this flexible program, which has grown from a group of 20 students in its first year to having 220 across two campuses in Epping and Preston. The Pavilion School is seen by many as an innovative state school, delivering best practice education for young people who've not been served well by the mainstream school system. Our classes. Students are divided into groups of 20 students, and each group is allocated one teacher, one youth worker, and one teaching assistant. Class groups are made up of students with diverse ages and abilities. Students stay with their class group for all the core subjects, literacy, numeracy, personal development, and work-related skills. Students can opt into elective classes, VET courses, Koori programs, excursions, and camps. All our classes start with a group circle where students and staff connect, share experiences, and set goals for the day. There are no facts and figures to be found for the Pavilion School on the My School website, but it sounds like they're doing a tremendous job. Back to you, Jean.
Well, congratulations to the Pavilion School. We're sorry that we couldn't get any facts and figures from ACARA. It's not on their agenda, apparently. But what we do know is that there are no fees charged at this school because the public school teachers and the public system believe that education is not a charity, it is a right. And these children have the right to the very best that Australia can provide. With that note, I think it's almost time to go and to remind you that there's a dogs website at www.adogs.info. Thanks to everybody, but from all of us here at 3CR, it's bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. I died, says he.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.